Heard all across the United States, Canada, and around the world. This is the Best of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. Hank is president of the Christian Research Institute. At CRI, our desire is to equip you to not only defend the historic Christian faith, but become an apprentice of Jesus Christ, because life and truth matter. To learn more or to find resources to help you grow in grace, call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. Or go to our website at equip.org. That's equip.org. And now, here's Hank Hanegraaff.
And thank you very much, Randy. As always, a delight to be in studio as we answer your questions as they come in. When you dial, as just mentioned, 888-ASK-HANK, numerically 888-275-4265. Contact information on the web, equip.org. Via the mail, it's box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And our resource consultants there standing by, 888-7000, and the letter CRI. Do remember the website, because there's a lot of stuff you can find there. Not only answers to questions, books, resources, but also the Hank Unplugged podcast. And so far, the Hank Unplugged podcast with Rankin Wilborn, on union with Christ. His book is the second most listened to yet. If you haven't listened, check it out and subscribe and rate Hank Unplugged on iTunes. That'll get the podcast into even more listening spheres. So again, give it a 5-star rating on iTunes, and many, many more people will listen as a result of you taking that action step. Also, this Wednesday, 2 days from now, my podcast with Vocab Malone. It's on Black Hebrew Israelites in part, which is one of the most searched items on equip.org website, and something that you've probably been exposed to, whether you realize it or not. Vocab Malone joins me on this episode of Hank Unplugged to discuss the Black Hebrew Israelites, urban apologetics, and being equipped with essential Christian doctrine. We hope you enjoy the energy, the information, the insights from Vocab as much as we did. Again, check out the, we've done almost 50 episodes of Hank Unplugged so far, just in less than a year, 50 episodes. So lots of them that you can listen to. Very, very popular. Also want to mention the Christian Research Journal, our award-winning magazine. No Christian home should be without it. A brand new edition, hot off the press. The cover story I've talked about, Hulu's The Handmaid's Tale. It's an incredible story in and of itself. And there are so many great articles. I hardly know which one to pitch, to be honest with you. One of the articles, Abortion and the Moral Law, it's by Stephen Bratz. And he is a board-certified OBGYN doctor living in California. He served as chairman of the OBGYN department at the Naval Medical Center in San Diego. And he served with the Marine Corps, 1st Medical Battalion in Somalia and the Iraq War. And the article he wrote is just fantastic. It's titled Abortion and the Moral Law, as I just mentioned, but he gives four aspects of moral law that can be applied to the question of abortion. And he does it brilliantly. The first of those principles is the golden rule. Whatever you wish that others would do to you, you ought also to do to them, because that is the law of the prophets. Imagine for a moment that you're looking at an ultrasound image of a baby in the womb. And now as you're watching, you see an abortionist inserting an instrument of death into, well, you're watching and you find out it's you. You wouldn't want that for yourself. And therefore, you wouldn't want it for anyone else either. And the second point, the second aspect of moral law that is explicated in this article is the responsibility to nurture a child. A child must be nurtured, and this nurturing is a continuous process. It begins in the womb when the fetus depends on his or her mother to take care and provide physiologic sustenance through the womb and the placenta. And then there's the aspect of the moral law that involves the responsibility to protect innocent life when it is in our power to do that. And the story that is told here by Dr. Bratz is absolutely stunning. I won't go through the story, but the conclusion is that when a woman chooses life, it may involve great sacrifice, much courage, but it is the application of a fundamental moral virtue. And finally, the fourth aspect of the moral law involved here is that you shall not kill. This is one of the Ten Commandments, and it is a fundamental moral value found throughout the centuries of human history. Murdering a family member or a member of a close-knit community is an intolerable crime because of the high degree of trust and love that occurs in these environments. Now, what trusting, nurturing relationship could be more intimate than a baby growing in a mother's womb? And therefore, the moral aspect of the law says, don't do it. There's an incredible article, again, part and parcel of the current edition of the Christian Research Journal. Also wanted to mention that I'm going to be giving a talk this weekend, and part of that talk has to do with Romans chapter 12 and the edict there that we are to renew our mind. You know where Paul says, therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Charles Malik, and this is one of my favorite all-time quotes, he was the former Lebanese ambassador to the U.S. and president of the United Nations. He said, the problem is not only to win souls, but to save minds. If you win the whole world and lose the mind of the world, you will soon discover that you have not won the world at all. Indeed, it may turn out that you have actually lost the world. No civilization can endure with its mind being as confused and disordered as ours is today. All our ills stem proximately from false philosophies that had been let loose in the world and that are now being taught in the universities. The greatest danger besetting the church is the danger of anti-intellectualism. The mind, as to its greatest and its deepest reaches, is not cared for enough. People are in a hurry to get out of the university, start earning money, serving the church, or preaching the gospel, but they have no idea of the infinite value of spending years of leisure conversing with the greatest minds and souls of the past, and thereby ripening and sharpening and enlarging their powers of thinking. The result is that the arena of creative, and I would argue critical thinking, is abdicated and vacated to the enemy. Renewing of the mind, however, and this is a crucial point, should not be relegated to thinking right or the interior act of the mind. We are to offer our bodies as living sacrifices. And what that means is that our character is a function of the habitual ways in which we comport our bodies. By way of the spiritual disciplines, I'm empowered to bountifully bless those who insult me or persecute me or say all manner of evil against me. In essence, I am empowered to overcome evil with good. Those who abstain from bodily desires, who offer their bodies as living sacrifices, will of a certainty enjoy an inward peace and serenity of mind. What I'm saying here is that there's an intimate connection between offering your body as a living sacrifice and the renewal of your mind. Those who live in the spirit of the disciplines will succeed in bringing their bodies into alignment with their redeemed spirits. The problem here is a failure to recognize the part that our body plays in the renewal of our minds. The human body is the focal point of human existence. Jesus had one. We have one. The Christian faith is not platonic. It is very physical, even with respect to resurrection. And without the body in its proper place, the renewal of our minds remains a practical impossibility. Although we call the spirits spiritual, as we call the disciplines spiritual, they require dispositions of the body. Face it, we're limited to our bodies, so the disciplines cannot be carried out except as our body and its members are surrendered to God. As reading earlier on this morning, very, very early this morning, in fact, C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters, where Uncle Screwtape reproaches his nephew Wormwood for permitting his patient to become a Christian. And then he says, well, nevertheless, Wormwood, there is no need to despair. Hundreds of these adult converts have been reclaimed after a brief sojourn in the enemy's camp and are now with us. All the habits of the patient, both mental and bodily, are still in our favor. One of our great allies at present is the church itself. If a convert's habits, if they remain the same, as Screwtape understood better than most, they will not experience the renewal of the mind via the living sacrifice of the body. An Eastern monk, well known to St. Basil the Great, Gregory of Nyssa, St. Gregory the Theologian, points out 8 principal vices from which all other thoughts stem. The first thought is gluttony. Think about this. This is a passion of the flesh. It is the desire to give up the ascetic practices, principally the fast, because fasting is difficult. And we fast because we want to take the stubborn child, the stomach, and beat it into subjection. Why? Because gluttony affects our body, and as our body is affected, so our mind is affected. We're body-soul unities. It's a psychosomatic problem. The second is fornication. It excites carnal lust. Again, you can understand this without a whole lot of explanation. This is a function of the body. Sex is psychosomatic, as is lust. The third is the love of money. That's why we discipline ourselves to give. Almsgiving is part and parcel with prayer and fasting, a 3-braided cord. The fourth is discontent, and thus we turn our attention to the needs of others. The fifth, anger, captures the mind during prayer and vividly brings up the face of an offender and how we want God to deal with that offender as opposed to working redemptively in us. The sixth, despondency, You know, it's oftentimes called the noonday devil who arouses vexation with our station in life, the seventh vainglory. Imagine healing women and children and the adulation that would come with it, crowds pressing in to touch your garments, consecration as a holy man. Well, that's vainglory. The eighth is pride. The demon of pride counsels the soul not to profess God as an ever-present helper, but is consoled in one's own self-sufficiency. Bottom line, we must renew our minds, but it is not just an interior act of the mind. It's not just believing right things. It means that we must discipline our bodies. And during Great Lent, there is no better time than this to do that. We'll be back in just a few moments. The number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK, numerically 888-275-4265. Please don't touch that dial.
Nothing is more basic or central to knowing and enjoying God than union with Christ. It's what the Bible is all about. It's the very heart of the Christian faith and what makes the gospel good news. Yet, if you asked most people today, what is the gospel? Union with Christ is likely not what springs to mind. Something is terribly amiss. Be sure to read Rankin Wilborn's essential book, Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God. To receive your copy, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be back in just a moment with more from Hank Hanegraaff. When you need answers about the Bible and the intersection of our faith and culture, you turn to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute. But did you know we're entirely supported by God's provision through friends like you? In appreciation for your gift of ministry support today, we'll send you Hank's book, The Third Day, a convincing case study on the most important truth of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Johnny Erickson Tada has said, Hank leaves no stone unturned, thoroughly portraying the resurrection as our grand hope, the glorious springboard from which we all dive into eternity. Strengthen your defense of the resurrection and increase your confidence in your own eternal future. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. In his book, Union with Christ, Pastor Rankin Wilborn shows that our neglect of union with Christ explains the gaps between our faith and our lives. When the work of Christ for us becomes abstracted from the person of Christ within us, is it any wonder there is a chasm between our beliefs and our experiences? If we're serious about being agents of change for God's kingdom, we must first realize that we cannot be transforming unless we ourselves are being transformed. And that means putting down deep roots into the life-transforming waters of God's Spirit. Be sure to read Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God by Rankin Wilborn. Receive your copy by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or just visit online at equip.org. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go on your phone or handheld device with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. In his remarkable book, Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God, Pastor Rankin Wilburn writes, "Of all the good news the gospel brings, the greatest, and indeed the door to all the rest, is that you can be united to Christ. And if Jesus has joined his life to yours, then you have been given everything you need for life and godliness. But unless you are united to him, all that he has done for you remains useless and of no value to you." To receive your copy of Union with Christ, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Let's return to your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thanks so much, Randy. In light of the fact that we are promoting Union with God by Rankin Wilburn, I thought I'd deal with a question that came up on Facebook recently by Patricia. She asked, "Did I hear Hank say that we are gods?" Well, yes and no. I'll explicate that in a moment. But Patricia goes on to ask, "I remember hearing Joyce Meyer saying that we are little gods, and it blew me away. Though we were created in the image of God, and that he desires us to be conformed into the image of Jesus, we are," and then all caps, "not Jesus, nor God, nor could we ever be. Sounds blasphemous to even insinuate." Now again, going back to the initial part of the question, did I hear Hank say that we are gods? Again, yes and no. I did with qualification say that. Gods by grace or gods by participation. Now, a context is very, very important here because you probably also heard me say that there is no God. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. In other words, you need just a little bit of context here, and if you just take a phrase out of context, well, you can make someone say something entirely other than what they mean to say. I would also point out that in John 10, Jesus asks, "Is it not written in your law, I have said you are God?" So there is a sense in which, if our Lord said it, we can say it. Of course, it has to be properly contextualized. Likewise, God says in Psalm 82, "I said, you are gods, you are all sons of the Most High." Again, it takes some explaining because in context in Psalm 82, you see that those who are called gods will die like the mere men that they are. So they're certainly not ineffable, they're not omnipresent, they're not omnipotent, they are still human. So while the language is not unbiblical, what can be unbiblical is meaning inordinately poured into these passages or into the phrase that we are gods. We are gods only by participation. We partake in the divine nature. And what Joyce Meyer, and I'm glad Patricia brought that up in her question, what Joyce Meyer says is that a cow produces other cows, and in the same way, God produces gods. And I actually looked up the exact quote that Patricia was probably thinking about, in which Joyce Meyer says, "If you as a human being have a baby, you call it humankind. If cattle have other cattle, they call it cattle kind." I mean, what is God supposed to call us? Doesn't the Bible say we're created in his image? Well, the problem here is a misunderstanding of biblical language. And you can understand why there would be this misunderstanding because Meyer's mentor, Kenneth Hagin, said much the same thing. He said that man lives on terms of equality with God. Or as his devotee, Kenneth Copeland, put it, God's reason for creating Adam was his desire to reproduce himself. He was not a little like God. He was not almost like God. He was not subordinate to God, even. So here we have Copeland not only elevating humanity inordinately, but he demotes God to the status, and it is hard to even recall these words, to the status of a being who stands somewhere around 6'2" to 6'3", that weighs somewhere in the neighborhood of a couple hundred pounds, little better, and has a hand span of 9 inches across. So what do you have here? You have a real serious error, not only in elevating humankind inordinately, but demoting God to a physical being that is just a little bigger than Kenneth Copeland. And we also do not want to do what the Mormons do and say that God himself was once as we are now and is an exalted man who sits enthroned in yonder heaven. In other words, as man now is, God once was, and as God now is, man may become. Again, the problem is that man is elevated to the status of God by nature, and God is demoted to the nature of a man. Let me say it clearly. We will never be gods by nature. We will never be God as Christ is God by nature. Rather, through union and participation in the divine energies, we become partakers of the divine nature. As Gregory Palamas rightly observed, the Logos became flesh, and the flesh became Logos, even though neither abandoned its own proper nature. And so we have a great and glorious truth, and the reason I'm promoting union with Christ, it's something you want to read. Rankin Wilborn explicates this treasure, which we would know about if we knew Christian history. And he does it in a simple way. Timothy Keller says of this book, it is simply the best book for lay people on the subject. The descent of the ineffable and incarnation provides the ladder of divine ascent by which you and I may rise up to union with God. Now, historically, the Christian church has illustrated this scintillating truth through the thrusting of a sword into the red-hot flames of a furnace. The steel of the sword takes on the properties of fire. Gray steel turns fiery red. But the sword never becomes the fire, nor the fire the sword. Each retains its own properties. But imagine, now the sword can not only cut, but it can burn. It is imbued with energies that are in it, but not of it. The self-same verity has been elucidated by way of water and sponge. Augustine was famous for elucidating this truth in this manner. The sponge absorbs the ineffable waters of God's inexhaustible energies, and yet remains a sponge. The sponge obviously does not become the water, nor the water the sponge. To be in Christ, to experience his divine life, is to experience his energies, but not to partake in his essence. This energies-essence distinction made plain through a myriad of illustrations, but clearly taught in the early Christian church. If we were more conversant with biblical history, or with the community memory of the church, we would be well aware of the fact that right up, and I should say not just up to, but through Martin Luther, the church unanimously affirmed the aphorism of Athanasius. as God became man, so men may become God. As God became man, so men may become God. Or as Luther put it, word became flesh, so flesh became word. And this is after the Reformation. He was teaching the inviolate truth that we may become partakers of the divine nature. If you want to see how ubiquitous this teaching is in the writings of the church, read Rankin Wilborn's Union with Christ. And this is in all areas of the church. In other words, it is not in a particular area where you say, well, that's Eastern Orthodoxy or that's Roman Catholicism. No, you find it with reformers like Luther. You find it throughout the history of the church. But I will admit, as Rankin Wilborn makes very, very plain in his book, that this is a truth that has been lost on the modern mind. But Jesus very clearly says that a relationship with him is like that of branches to a vine. He says that in John chapter 15. It's living, it's organic, it's dependent on a source outside of you to sustain you. Grafted into the vine, your very nature begins to change. The lifeblood of another flows within you and gives you life. Jesus himself used word pictures and similes and metaphors to capture the mystery of union with Christ. So it wasn't just the church fathers, sponge and water, sword and flames, but it was Jesus using metaphors to communicate a truth that is quite frankly beyond us. If you've ever wondered, isn't there more to the Christian life than what I'm experiencing, you want to read this book. Union with Christ was once considered to be the very heart of why the gospel is good news. In fact, I would say this. Nothing is more basic or more central to the Christian life than union with Christ. We may know what God has saved us from, but we have lost sight of what God has saved us for. You want to read this book, Union with Christ, and along with this book, and I hope I whet your appetite for this just a little bit in the first segment of the broadcast today, read The Spirit of the Disciplines by Dallas Willard. And then you'll start to understand how disciplining your body has something to do with how you will succeed in living out the Christian life in a victorious way. Christianity is not just about the interior recesses of the mind. It is about disciplining your body so that when you face, as you most certainly will, the fiery darts of the evil one, you will be able to stand, and after you've done everything to stand. These books, carefully selected, available for those who support the ministry all this month. Check it out on the web at equip.org. Talk to our resource consultants at 888-7000 and the letters CRI, or write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The quote of the day, and much more coming up on the other side of the break.
While millions of Christians may know a fair amount about God, they do not adequately know him. Their spiritual walk remains little more than a cold intellectual assent to tidy packets of rational propositions, rather than a daily transformational experience of Christ that fuels a joyful life and dynamic witness. If this describes your situation, be sure to read Pastor Rankin Wilburn's remarkable book, Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God. To receive your copy of Union with Christ, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll return to the Bible Answer Man broadcast right after this. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go on your phone or handheld device with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. In his book, Union with Christ, Pastor Rankin Wilburn shows that our neglect of union with Christ explains the gaps between our faith and our lives. When the work of Christ for us becomes abstracted from the person of Christ within us, is it any wonder there is a chasm between our beliefs and our experiences? If we're serious about being agents of change for God's kingdom, we must first realize that we cannot be transforming unless we ourselves are being transformed. And that means putting down deep roots into the life-transforming waters of God's Spirit. Be sure to read Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God by Rankin Wilburn. Receive your copy by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or just visit online at equip.org. When you need answers about the Bible and the intersection of our faith and culture, you turn to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute. But did you know we're entirely supported by God's provision through friends like you? In appreciation for your gift of ministry support today, we'll send you Hank's book, The Third Day, a convincing case study on the most important truth of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Johnny Erickson Tada has said, "Hank leaves no stone unturned, thoroughly portraying the resurrection as our grand hope, the glorious springboard from which we all dive into eternity." Strengthen your defense of the resurrection and increase your confidence in your own eternal future. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. In the book, Union with Christ, Pastor Rankin Wilburn writes, "Our neglect of union with Christ explains the gaps between our faith and our lives. When the work of Christ for us becomes abstracted from the person of Christ within us, is it any wonder there is a chasm between our heads and our hearts, or between our beliefs and our experiences?" Don't miss Pastor Wilburn's Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God. To receive your copy, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We now return to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you much, Randy. And the quote of the day comes from the companion book to Union with Christ. They fit like a hand in a glove. It's called The Spirit of the Disciplines by Dallas Willard, who writes, "When God made us, he made creatures of astonishing presumption. We humans can almost forget that we are dust. Perhaps we must in some measure forget it in order to carry on. Yet as we breathe and eat and sleep, we also think and aspire. And that is amazing. In that paradox, that puzzle in which the pieces do not truly fit together, we can either applaud ourselves for such a rare and amazing accomplishment, or we can begin to understand that we are touched by powers beyond ourselves. We are creatures given such diverse possibilities that we can actually be led to heaven or to hell." Imagine that. We are not simply cosmic accidents. We are not merely specks of insignificant dust. That's a narrative that you hear. I mean, I heard Bill Nye, the Science Guy, say that very thing. In fact, he concluded that he just sucked. He is just a speck of dust on a speck in a galaxy, having no significance. His life in the end meaning nothing. When he dies, he's like a dog. So here you have the materialist narrative. But the reality is, all of us know. We know because it's carved into our consciousness that we are made for eternity. And God grants us a choice to experience Him, the very one for whom we are created for all eternity, or to experience separation in rebellion from Him for all eternity. And what we do now counts for all eternity. And I say that as prologue to saying that I hope that many of you will take an opportunity to stand with this ministry. This is a ministry making a difference at a critical juncture in human history. This is a time in which the real problem is no longer the Mormons and the Jehovah's Witnesses. I'm not suggesting that they're not cults and not a problem, but I'm suggesting that there are even greater problems that we are today dealing with. Cults like materialism, philosophical naturalism, cults like atheism, narcissism. These are the cults, the secularist cults today. Their eyes glow red. They are like wolves that want to expunge Western civilization as we know it, because Western civilization as we know it is rooted and grounded in a biblical worldview. It is the opposition to the sexual revolution. It is the opposition to abortion, to gender fluidity. It is the oft-hated worldview rooted in the Bible that has become a dual threat. It is a threat to secularism and, of course, a threat to Islam. And unfortunately, in our culture, the secularists believe that somehow or other, Islam was going to be a good neighbor, and therefore is a far better ideal outcome than continued Western civilization based on a biblical worldview. Well, why is that? It is because people simply do not understand the biblical worldview. Or if they understand it, they want to oppose the biblical worldview. But oftentimes it's a lack of understanding. And why that lack of understanding? Well, it is because Christians are not equipped to communicate what they believe and why they believe it, to give answers, reasons for the hope that lies within them. It's also, quite frankly, because the church has become a circus to them. The early church was very, very different from the church today. In the early church, people would look on, and one of the things they would say is, see how they love one another, and the love of Christ would constrain them to come. They would see that the Christians were manifestly different. They not only exercised brotherly love, in other words, not only exercise love towards one another, not a hypocritical love, you know, the counterfeit, you know, the one with the mask. No, real love. They cared for the poor and the downtrodden among them. But they also loved their enemies. And this was a mind blower. You know, Jesus said, if you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even pagans doing that? And if you greet only your brothers, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, even as your heavenly Father is perfect. So Jesus was commanding a different kind of love, and that love was exercised in the early church such that the church became a leavening force in the culture. And that is precisely what is missing today. So we look at a culture in rapid demise and do not think that it cannot disappear, because cultures come and go. All we have to do is know history to know that that is true. We can, in the pomp and circumstance, think we're going to be here forever, but suddenly there's a fall. Think of Babylon. Mene, Mene, Tekel, Parson, Weighed, found wanting. Suddenly, the glory of the Babylonian Empire expunged in a night. The king slaughtered. And suddenly a kingdom that had been the glory of the Chaldees was no more. That same thing can happen, but there's something that we can do. I remember Chuck Colson once saying to me, we cannot, as exciting as it may be to think about what is happening in the global South, we cannot lose Western civilization. We cannot lose 2,000 years of Western civilization. I think he was right. My plea to you, therefore, is to do something about it. And one of the things that you can do is to stand with us prayerfully, financially, in the battle for life and truth. You know, tithing in the Old Testament not only prepared God's people to become hilarious givers, but also produced a temple of unparalleled splendor. Tithing transformed the Israelites. They had pined for the pleasures and protections of pagan Egypt at one time, more than for the one who had miraculously parted the Red Sea. But they became joyful givers. And the Bible chronicles the prayer of David as he thanked God for the very privilege of being able to give to the work of the Lord. Remember those words of David, "Who am I? Who are my people that we should be able to give as generously as this? Everything comes from you, and we have given you only what comes from your hand. And now I have seen with joy how willingly your people who are here have given to you." So what began as a spiritual discipline had evolved into sheer delight. Imagine what could happen if we gave in that same way. So my plea is for you to join Sierra's monthly support team. You can do that in a safe, secure fashion on the web at equip.org. Be pleased to personalize any one of my books to you, a family member, or a friend. If you give this month, great resources available as well. You can check those out on the web at equip.org. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk to Bob in Louisiana. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Doing well, thank you.
Yeah, you hit on something that was really relevant. I wrote a small manuscript not so long ago called The Closet Christian. And this is one of the biggest problems that I see that goes on within almost all the churches, is they're treating God like they're going into a closet and getting a shirt, and they put it on. In other words, they go into the church, and they hear the sermon. Well, if the sermon doesn't fit for them that day, they leave out of the church, closing the doors behind them like they're leaving God inside of a closet. And when they go back outside, they're not taking God with them. They're not taking the scriptures with them. They're not taking the love of Jesus Christ in their hearts with them. And they're just going on and living their daily lives. And that's one of the biggest problems with Christianity today in our nation that I see.
Well, I think you're right, and I think that the true Christian is marked. I mean, this is what we see in the scriptures in Revelation chapter 14. We see that the true Christian is marked. He is marked in the forehead and the hands. And what that means, essentially, that it, is that he is marked by what he does and what he says. In other words, his worldview and what he does marks him in terms of who he belongs to, he or she. And so the true Christian can never be a closet Christian. When the true Christian goes into the world, there is some kind of a reaction. You cannot hide genuine Christianity. The problem, however, is that we are conformed to the culture. And what does Scripture say to us? Therefore, I urge you, my brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not be conformed any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. Then you will test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and His perfect will. We are to be transformed, not conformed, but transformed. And when we are transformed, we become transformational agents in the culture. Out of time for this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Do remember, Monday through Friday at this time, your questions answered when you dial 888-ASK-HANK, numerically 888-275-4265. And my thanks to all of you who do stand shoulder to shoulder with us in the battle for life and truth. We'll be right back tomorrow with more of the show.
Thank you for joining us today. Our mission at the Christian Research Institute is to equip Christians to think and live Christianly. As thanks for your gift in support of the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute, Hank Hanegraaff would like to send you the book Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God by Rankin Wilburn. Just call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271, or just visit online at equip.org. That's equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go on your phone or handheld device with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. When you need answers about the Bible and the intersection of our faith and culture, you turn to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute. But did you know we're entirely supported by God's provision through friends like you? In appreciation for your gift of ministry support today, we'll send you Hank's book, The Third Day, a convincing case study on the most important truth of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Johnny Erickson Tada has said, Hank leaves no stone unturned, thoroughly portraying the resurrection as our grand hope, the glorious springboard from which we all dive into eternity. Strengthen your defense of the resurrection and increase your confidence in your own eternal future. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now.